So we're talking today about hope. Hope. Hope is an opening to divine light. Hope is a window. Hope is an invitation, isn't it? To all that can be, to all that is in truth. And a lot of us are craving some hope. Have you noticed? In our world, maybe in your life, you are craving hope. Maybe you are seeking, reaching for hope. And maybe you're already there. We're all at different places at different times, and each of us in any given moment somewhere else on that spectrum. I think of hope as part of a spectrum of moving toward faith, that faith is kind of a ripened sort of hope. Trust is somewhere in there. Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, said trust is a cheaper brand of faith. And so, you know, I think I've had this a little bit of a thing about hope, because I've always wanted to bring us to faith, always wanted to skip over, in a way, hope. I've even given talks about, you know, when hope becomes faith, and let's get to the faith, right? Let's get to where we really need to be, on solid ground and principle, and the place where we can claim the truth and bring forth the truth and be the light and be the love. And hope, well, oh, that's just an opening, you know, that's just a doorway, that's just, you know, it's important, but come on, guys, let's get through the door, right? But there's a place for hope, isn't there? There's a place for hope. And that's what I was missing, I think, was the importance of that. I remember years ago giving one of those kinds of talks about, you know, it's Advent, and I'm thrilled that you know, in unity, we're moving toward, we're using faith instead of hope now. And gave a whole talk on that, you know. And at the end of the talk, somebody was coming through the receiving line. This is back in my first ministry. And she said, and her walk was with MS, and she had been through, obviously, a lot in her life, mentally, physically, emotionally, dealing with that disease. And she said, but I need hope. I still need hope. People need hope. And right there in that moment was this crystallized, you know, understanding for me. That there I was, able-bodied, always been pretty healthy and whole, and never had a walk like hers. And I realized my perspective was limited. And in that moment, I understood the importance of hope in a whole new way. We do need hope. Human beings need hope. Hope is something for us to hang on to. Hope is that opening of the door. But we can't just assume that everybody can leap into faith in any given moment, right? It's this recognition, as yesterday and Friday night we had a prayer chaplain training. So when I'm looking to David and Susan and others in the room, it feels like our dialogue is continuing, right? Meet them where they are, love them where they are, right, David? Is one of the refrains of what we spoke about. And it's meeting ourselves and meeting each other and meeting the world and meeting groups of people with that place where we are, and then recognizing that that's not where we stay, right? As we talked about last week, there's beingness and there's becomingness. And so it's a recognition that this is where we are now, and hope would be really helpful in this moment for all of us to have that opening to light. There might even, like I said, be a craving for it. You know, there are many wonderful poets that come from the Middle East. That's really actually a huge part of the culture, in especially Persia and Iran. And you think of Khalil Gibran and the whole slew of poetry out of Sufism, and many of in modern day Turkey today. But we often think of Rumi. Hafiz is another one of my favorites. And he speaks about this light. This light that we want, this light that we reach for, this light that we desire, this light that in our faith we stand in, but in our hope we get the glimmer of, right? And it draws us. And he speaks about it in this prayer. This Middle Eastern poet, Hafiz, like a great starving beast, my body is quivering. Fixed on the scent of light. Isn't that how we feel sometimes? Maybe that's how all of humanity is at this moment. You know, quivering, fixed on the scent of light. And it is in our fixing on the scent of light that we open the door to hope, that we open our hearts to hope, that we open each other to hope. And for those of us who have been on the faith journey for a while, we can stand in that place of faith, and we certainly need those of us who can stand in that place, where whoever is in that place of steadiness, that place of knowing, that place of principle that says, I am that I am that I am that I am, no matter what happens around me, no matter what happens in the world, no matter what happens in my life. It's like Maya Angelou who said, you know, whatever happens in your life, your first response needs to be, thank you. Wow. Okay. Right? Sometimes that's a wow, because some things happen in life and that is not our first response, right? But if we condition ourselves to recognize that there is always growth, that there is always light, that there is always love, that there is always hope, even in the most horrid conditions, even in the most cruel situations, then when we are faced with them, we are ready. We know how to open the door. We know how to usher everybody in to the place of faith we stand, because we know it starts with hope. And we know how to offer hope then. Right? We all know how to offer hope to each other. We know how it feels to receive hope when we need it. If anybody's ever been in that place when you're on your knees praying, right? We say, you know, all these ways that we pray, all the ways that we talked about in our prayer chaplain training, the affirmative prayer style that is about principle, it's fabulous. And then sometimes when the going gets rough, we go right back into our traditions, right? We get on our knees and we beg and beseech. We call to the allness of God. And it's all a part of the spectrum of our journey. And there is the light once again. In the depths of despair, there is light. In the hardest times, there is light. Poems and prayers and spiritual practices, these are ways that we can bring forth the hope, bring forth the light, rekindle it in ourselves. So we're going to talk about and use a few of those throughout our time together this morning. Krista Tippett, the author of Becoming Wise, the book that we've been using throughout our fall, is wrapped up this week with hope. Hope is one of the raw materials she names in Becoming Wise. The others are faith and words and flesh, faith and love. Faith and words and flesh and love. And so it's intriguing to me that she ends with hope. And I imagine it's intentional, because hope is a beginning point. A time now for us to having taken in the material and discussed the material and ruminated and marinated in the material to say, okay, now I'm ready to begin again, right? And begin again at this ray of light, at this place of hope, at this knowing that there is more. There is so much in the human spirit, so much we have seen throughout the ages and history of and time, that we can see that again and again, hope renews us and renews itself and is contagious with one another. You know, it's that renewable resource that is always available to us. And maybe next week we'll talk about gratitude. Maybe it's gratitude is one of the ways that we open the door to that, that we shift ourselves out of darker places and into light. But recognizing that even ourselves, right? Sometimes people will say, well, this idea of the divine in all beings, you know, when we talk about this in Unity Basics, and it's like, yeah, except, and then there's always some exception we bring in, right? Some horrible person who's done horrible things, and we think that person couldn't possibly have the divine in them. But then we talk about it, we recognize, ah, the person is not horrible. The acts are horrible, right? And there's a very big distinction. That the light and the love and the spark of divinity, although it may not seem very visible, And that person may have never seen it or couldn't imagine that such could be so about themselves or about others who they are maybe mistreating in whatever ways. That we recognize that that is hope, right? Seeing that spark of divinity, knowing there's a spark of divinity in all life, that can be hope. And what ignites from there, what becomes from there, is us becoming, remembering the truth of who we are and helping others to remember as well. So that's the journey we're on. Yet it's so easy, isn't it? So easy to slide into cynicism. That's what Krista Tippett talks about. She says that unlike almost every worthwhile thing in life, cynicism is easy, right? Because it's never going to be proven wrong when some catastrophe comes along or some corruption happens in our world. And we can point, the cynic can point to it and say, see, I was right. There it is. There it is again. It's like, you know, it again came up in our prayer topic. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Right? Do you want to live in that world of right? Most of us don't. Is that what we want to bring forth? No, of course not. She goes on to say, it's not generative, though, to be in that space. It judges things as they are, but it doesn't lift a finger to try to shift them. And so even us in our, you know, positive path for spiritual living, lifestyle of unity, right? We can get cynical. Anybody ever? Negative, bitter, judgmental, sarcastic? Ever traversed any of that ground, right? No, not us, never, right? So when we find ourselves in those places, we can start to recognize, I've shifted into what's easy. I've joined the easy bandwagon. But Jesus said the gate is narrow. That's right. I forgot that I was pointed to the narrow gate when I signed up to be a spiritual being in a human experience. When I said I will be incarnated on this planet, it was the narrow gate I was pointed to. And I'm going through that big, wide gate, like, you know, the cattle that are going through the gate and going, hey, let's all join over here by the water cooler. Like we used to say, and talk about everything negative, right? And then down we go, right? In the downward spiral. And then do you feel good after that? No. In the moment, it might be fun, you know, dissing and gossiping and all that stuff that the human mind loves to do. But we know from practice over and over again that that is not what's going to light up the world. That's not going to be the spark that we want to have happen in the world. That's not going to light our fire. Hope is a good place to start, though. And acceptance really is a part of hope, right? Acceptance might even precede hope, really. Acceptance is the recognition that we embrace things, meet things where they are. Oh, darn it, right? Because sometimes I don't want to. Do you? Sometimes I don't want to face what's going on in the world. I don't want to face the reality. I don't want to accept that we haven't evolved past this point. Do you ever feel like that? It's like, really? Really? We're still here? We're still having wars. We're still powering over each other. We're still all about the exterior while we're impoverished within. But yet we feel ourselves like maybe we've stepped through that doorway, and you have. And that makes you a bringer of hope, a bringer of light, a bringer of love, a bringer of peace. And that's what you were called to do. And when we stand in that, when we walk in that, then we know we're moving toward that great turning, toward the great transition, toward the great awakening, and that we ourselves are helping make it happen. That's why we're here. That's what it's all about. So acceptance, yes, it's part of the journey. Maybe one of the harder steps at times for us. And you know what? We have a great prayer to help us with that. 12-steppers know it really, really well. It's called the Serenity Prayer. Yesterday during our training, Ray brought it up, and he mentioned that, you know, there's more verses than just that first verse. And so here's both the first and second verse. There's actually a third, too. And it goes like this. God, you can say it with me if you want. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, accepting one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. Whew. Yes, especially that last line, huh? That last line got me too. Yeah, yeah. To be reminded again and again that we are on a journey by design, that we have come to the difficult impasses of life, both as a collective in our humanity and maybe in your personal life or your interpersonal life or your journey that is happening individually at the same time. We can't not be affected in both directions, right? The collective influences the individual influences the collective. It's always been true, but it seems more poignant now. Because we live in a worldwide web, right? We live in a world of interconnectedness, both from a physical, technological aspect, most of all, from a spiritual aspect. But when both of those are available to us, the world becomes the neighbors are our neighbors across the world. You know, the world becomes a part of our journey. It's in our psyche. It's in our everyday lives. It's in the back of our minds or the depths of our hearts, even as we go about our day. You can feel it. You can feel it in the air, right? You can feel it in the energy. And guess what you can feel as well? Whatever we bring forth, the hope, the light, the love, the possibility, the knowing that this might be the long game, and it's going to require acceptance. Acceptance then leads to hope. Hope leads to trust. Trust leads to faith. We've got it all available to us. So the author of that Serenity Prayer, his name is Reinhold Niebuhr, and he was once referred to as the greatest living political philosopher of America. So there's hope for us yet, right? Those in politics can write prayers. Can pray, can bring forth these ideas that stay with us for decades and decades and decades. A prayer that most of us nodded when I mentioned it, in a recognition of it being known. To enrich our outer being has become a cultural, for many, many decades, has been a cultural focus, right? How the personality shows up, how the outward status shows up, how we show up, and we have fed that, right? We like the celebrity, the athlete, the politician, the big business person, the person who's amassed a lot of wealth and worldly power. We give a lot of credence to that. And Krista Tippett talks about how when we have done this for so long, that outer focus, it leaves an inner impoverishment, right? Because there's this impulse to keep focusing on the outside. She tells a story that puts a fine point on this of somebody who she worked for, an ambassador, who was a nuclear arms expert. He was of great renown, and he would give brilliant speeches, she said. He would go toe-to-toe with the Soviets. And then, because she worked for him, she saw the inner workings of his life, his interpersonal life. And she said at home, he would write these terse adolescent messages to his wife that he would not even deliver himself. He'd have them delivered through his staff, and his wife was upstairs. Right. So, right. So we don't see that, right? We don't always see that. But isn't it a pointer to the inner life, and how if the interpersonal life looks like that, then you know that there's impoverishment on the inner life. right? And what we are all about on our journey is alignment, alignment with the truth of who we are, alignment with the principle, alignment with that light and that love and that peace and that harmony, so that it shows up everywhere in every relationship we have, not just to the outer public, but through all avenues of expression, through all avenues of expression, through all avenues of expression, we can be bringers of hope. For ourselves, when we need it, we get it from our spiritual practices, from the poems and the prayers and the songs and the everything that we can reach for that is a part of our practice. And then when we are filled, or as we get filled, we shine it out. We bring it forth. We express it in all aspects of life. So we can see that choices and priorities and the ways of being and the culture and what the media shows us, all of that is something that's going on, right? All the social media conversations that happen, we can see when those start to go south and it's time for us to exit, right? So that's the key, is for us to stay in that kind of space where we're in a constant discernment process that says, oh, there's not much light here. Thank you, I'm out of this conversation. Or I bring as much light as I can and then I exit, or I leave it with, you know, whatever it may be. So those, if you're in those kinds of conversations, to recognize when to get out so that you can stay on the path of evolution. You know, there's a collective map for our evolution as human beings. It's called spiral dynamics. Anybody ever heard of spiral dynamics? Yeah, so Don Beck and Christopher Cowan started this. It's you can look it up, but there, I just show you a spiral just so you can get a basic idea of it. But the basic idea is that humanity has been on this ever evolving spiral. And as you begin at the very earliest stages, instinctive survival stages, it does continue on. So at the next level, which is more tribal, you still have the instinctual levels, but you bring them to the next level. And so then you go to the next level. And can you put it up again for a second, Brenly? Sorry. And then you go to the next level and the next level, you know. So there's the dominant. There's a time when we are in that red phase, which is egoic. And it's about power and power over. And then there's an authoritarian. It's all about law and order. And there's an achievist about technology and science. And then a lot of us will find ourselves in New Thought in the green stage, the communitarian, all about community, all about oneness and connection, and that we, you know, we, every life matters, and, you know, those kinds of things. Then there's a whole new tier that we can leap over from here to systematic and holistic. And now I just noticed there's a whole nother one called coral. So anyway, it's something you can look up. But what I want to tell you is to offer you this as a ray of hope, that there's even a map for where we're headed. It's not just a leap into the divine mystery, which we also love and embrace and accept as a part of the journey, but to know, too, that some people are really studying this and figuring out, yeah, well, this is where humanity is, and this is, you know, we've touched this stage, and then we kind of recede back, and then we move forward, but we're headed somewhere. We're headed somewhere, and that coral one, that one that is just out there, is undefined. So it's like we know, we've been able to, or somebody has been able to define that turquoise one. So what's next? Ah, that's the mystery. That's the one that is yet to unfold. This gives me hope when I see models like this, so I hope it does for you too, just to know that we are always evolving. And there, you know, again, it's like, you know, the faithful ones cast the vision into the coral to say, yes, there is divine mystery. There's something else. There's another frontier that we're going into. And then the social scientists come along and they say, oh, I can name that. I can tell you what that's going to look like. I can give you some markers, some sense of where you're headed. So the human mind loves that, don't we? We like a map. Who likes a map? Yeah, we like a map. We like it, some guideposts along the way. We don't have to be dogmatic about it. That's certainly, you know, if I say that too many times in this room, it'll be empty. So, But we do like some guidelines. We don't mind a few guidelines, like our five principles that are on the wall, or 12 powers. We like a few things that kind of give us something to hang on to. Affirmative prayer, some ideas about how to make this all work, how to bring the hope into the world, how to bring the hope to ourselves. You know, so often when we think of hope, we think of the next generation, right? We look to the next generation. I don't know how their shoulders are feeling these days, but I imagine it's a lot to put on the next generation. And yet they seem to rise up to it again and again and again. You know, Krista Tippett talks about how, because she interviews so many people and she's in the journalism, the political spectrum, and the spiritual spectrum, and the poetry spectrum, all these people that she talks about throughout the swath of our culture and in many other places and countries and cultures as well. And she says, you know, the words that have been infused in today's vocabulary come from the younger generation, and they've become a part of our regular vocabulary, like authenticity, like integrity, transparency. Now these are things that are a part of most of our organizations and institutions, and they're expected, or at least given over as a kind of ideal to reach for that we can all agree upon. And so to know that these things are good and these things are seated in throughout our spaces, our public spaces, to me gives me hope that this next generation is carrying that kind of care. You know, one of the things she talks about, too, is that it's not so much about, in her words, beyond the words that they give us, she says, is a wise refusal to disconnect what we know from who we are, what we believe from how we live, and who we are to each other. Such words, she says, carry heartbreaking, holy longings for us to see ourselves in our wholeness, to make the move from intelligence to wisdom from within. It is a harbinger of that, a call for that, a knowing of that. As we change our words, one of those raw materials, we also change how we operate with one another, what we agree to. Our new social norms break through at another level, at a higher level of evolution. Expectation. You know, that classic question adults have asked kids through the many, many decades, right? What do you want to be when you grow up? And more kids are not identifying what they want to be as much, maybe, as who they want to be, as how they want to be. Teaching us, it's not so much about the external, it's about the internal. This means we have succeeded. Pat yourself on the back. Because if the next generation gets it, that it's about who we are, it's about how we are, it's about how we show up, it's about remembering who we are, then that changes the world. That gives me hope. I hope it gives you hope too. And then we can just keep shining the light, keep showing the way. So Dr. Brené Brown, we've talked a little bit about during this series, because she points us to wholeheartedness, to what it looks like to be a wholehearted person. And she says that wholehearted people are people who are living and loving with their whole hearts, despite the risks involved, despite the uncertainty involved with that. That they are willing to be brokenhearted, the wholehearted are. And wholehearted, interestingly, wholehearted people, throughout this social research that is taking place through Brené and many other people's work, one of the other people she cites is C.R. Snyder from University of Kansas, is that hope is born out of struggle. That hope, that people who are wholehearted have a profound sense of hopefulness, but to not forget that it's born out of struggle. That it's maybe the idea of the wounded healer, right? That we bring forth out of our struggles an understanding of the importance of hope. Like that woman who stood across from me in the receiving line that one Sunday and taught me in those moments about the importance of hope. We learn to hope when we experience adversity and then when we move through it. So you can remember the times in your life, maybe when it was a despairing time or a darker time, and you can remember, how did I get through that? Because at the time, I didn't think I would ever get through. Did you ever have one of those times in your life where it's like, I didn't know how I was going to get up off of my knees or get up off the ground or get out of this sorrow? And somehow it happened, right? How did it happen? Maybe through time, maybe through dear friends, maybe through prayers, maybe through your spiritual practices. Maybe you heard some wise words that helped you. Maybe you saw somebody else get up and you went, oh, I can get up too. So whatever it is, to remember when we hit those darker times that there is light and we have taken the path before. We know that path. It may not be the same situation, but we know that path. We've been there. So here's a few spiritual practices that you might consider. Some of them you probably do. I'm throwing 9 of them up there just because maybe one of them will grab you and remind you. So one of them is to take in words of hope, right? To take in words of hope. So what you read and write, what you contemplate, what you watch, what you listen to. And to recall, as I just mentioned, those darker times turn brighter. To pray and to meditate, not giving up, but giving over. And to ground your body, to remember the importance to ground ourselves, to take rest, to take care of the body, to give our sorrows to the earth. And keep joy alive. You know, sometimes I think when we think somebody else is suffering, it's no time for us to sing or dance or play, right? But actually, it's the right and perfect time to bring forth more joy upon the earth. To band together, to love those who are near, to come together and to affirm and bless whatever it is that might be on our hearts. To listen, to listen, to listen, spirit, self, to others. Speak our truth. And to take action, to be love in action, to be faith in action, in whatever ways we might feel guided to do so. So those are just a few, right, of the many different possibilities of what we can do. So, you know, Jesus gave a Sermon on the Mount. It was in northern Israel where he gave the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes that we often talk about, all the blessings, which is what that word essentially means. And he gave the Sermon on the Mount from the hill in northern Israel. And then he came down to the plain and he gave the Sermon on the Plain that's recorded in Luke. That was a little bit more physical and literal. So where he was on the plain, he literally blessed people who were poor with abundance and people who were hungry with satiation. He blessed the people who were weeping with laughter and the ones who were hated and excluded, insulted and rejected with joy and heavenly rewards. And then he went on to say, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, the land. They shall possess the land. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they shall see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. All of these blessings are bringers of hope, bringers of light, a grounding, a allowing that blessing to take seed and to blossom from there, from within us. There's hope for all of us to bring darkness into the light and to bring light into the darkness. There's hope for all of us that as we recognize that the riches are actually within us, then the inner becomes the outer. The outer doesn't usually become the inner, we might have noticed. And so we become the light bringers of emulating that, of recognizing that, and of demonstrating that truth. So one last prayer I want to share with you, and I'm sharing these prayers in part because they might become ones that you want to work with. I find sometimes the prayers that we know really well in our culture are good ones to reach for in times when there's a collective concern. And you might use them in a centering prayer kind of approach where you speak them over and over to yourself during meditation. So this one is very familiar. It's attributed to St. Francis, but actually we know it was anonymously written. And so I invite you to close your eyes and take this in. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. And it is in dying that we are born to eternal life.
Make me an instrument. Make me an instrument. Make me an instrument of peace. Where there is hatred, I will love. And where there is sadness, I will bring joy. And where there is darkness, I will shine. I am an instrument of peace. Make me an instrument of peace. Make me an instrument of peace.
Thank you, Gary. Hope. It's on. Hope is a renewable resource. So let's keep renewing it within ourselves through our practices, through our grounding in spirit, so that we can truly be that bright light that the world is so longing for, that scent of light that we are picking up, the starving beast of us that is knowing that there is light at the end of any tunnel. Let's speak this affirmation together to embody it this week. Every day, I renew my hope with spiritual practice and shine the divine light within me as brightly as I can. And so it is.